Amid armed conflicts, a climate emergency, and the disruptions of the digital age comes a new source of uncertainty. Since Monday night, rosary prayers in St. Peter's Square as pilgrims pray for an 88-year-old Pope in hospital for the fourth time. We'll ask about Francis's health and what change at the top would mean inside the world's largest religious entity, one that doubles as a state recognized by 177 nations. The first Argentine pope has championed the rights of migrants and minorities, most recently even publicly clashing with a new U.S. vice president who's a convert to Catholicism. Will Francis's successor be a reformer or a conservative? More broadly, can 1.7 billion faithful find common ground in an age where bitter culture wars go beyond any one religion? How does the Catholic Church evolve? What does lie ahead? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking which way for the Church. With us, French Catholic Archbishop Jean-Yves Riocreux. Thank you for being with us. I see you've brought a copy of the Pope's autobiography,
yes,
Hope.
Yes, because it's very interesting to know his life from Argentine to the end, we can say, of his pontificate, since we don't know what will happen. But it's very interesting to see how he was elected 12 years ago and how he managed his mission around the world.
All right. That's definitely topics we'll be broaching. With us as well, he's a former Vatican correspondent for a French daily newspaper, La Croix. Nicolas Senez is the author in French of How America Wants to Change the Pope. Thanks for being with us. And your years in Rome were?
From 2016 to 2020.
All right, so you covered Pope Francis,
yes,
indeed.
I follow him for 18 travels around the world.
18 travels. Well, he's covering the Pope right now. Hendro Munsterman is in Rome, Vatican correspondent for the Dutch newspaper Nederlands Dagblad. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
By the way, you can listen, like, and subscribe to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, it's day 12 of the Pope in hospital and among those praying outside Rome's Gemelli Hospital this Tuesday, members of a Vietnamese community of nuns and priests. That's on top of the prayer marathons that have started in St. Peter's Square. Papal affairs are notoriously opaque, particularly when it comes to the sovereign pontiff's health. However, there have been twice daily bulletins from the Vatican. And what's the latest that they're telling us, Hendro Munsterman?
Yes, so every morning at around 8 o'clock, we get the bulletin about how the night has been passing for Pope Francis. Every morning, we get news about his night, how he slept, what he's doing in the morning. And we have get an evening update, more medical. Probably in a few minutes, we will get it. I might even be able to tell you what is going on these moments. Yesterday evening, the latest news was that some indicators seem to notice a little improvement of his health, even if the Vatican still, and his doctors still consider his state critical at this moment.
There was concern worldwide when the Vatican announced that there would be these nightly prayers in St. Peter's Square, because that reminded everybody of 2005, the last time a sitting pope died, and John Paul II, and back then, that's what we saw every night.
Well, that's true. We have to remember that in 2005, the situation was different, because Pope John Paul II was in the Vatican, in the Apostolic Palace, in a way looking over St. Peter's Square, where young people, and also older people, came to pray in the more spontaneous. Pope Francis now is in the hospital, in the Gemelli Hospital, the north of Rome, so he's not there, and the prayer is more organized by the Vatican itself. I was there yesterday, of course. I was trying also to understand what kind of people were there. I was surprised that there were, for the first evening, with a very late announcement, many people coming from Rome wanting to express their solidarity, their closeness to this Pope, this Argentinian Pope that almost 12 years now is the Bishop of Rome, and that is very much beloved by many people here in the city and all over the world.
And I suspect, Bishop Jean-Yves Riocreux, that you have been celebrating masses throughout France.
Oh, yeah, since 12 days since he was in the hospital, we pray in Prince Parish where I am at. And I know that everywhere in France, as well, and in the whole world, the prayer, because this Pope went in 40 trips, 60 countries. And I think, for example, of the last visit he made, it was in France, in the Corsica in December. And before he was in Papua New Guinea, he was in Timor, he was in Indonesia, Singapore, and in all these places, the people pray, and especially also, as we can know, in Argentina, his native place.
Yeah, certainly in Argentina, where concern is palpable. Morgan Eyre has that story.
In Argentina's capital, crowds of people turned out in this square for a special mass to pray for Pope Francis. Before becoming the first pope from South America, he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires. He spoke in this very square to pray, but also to denounce inequalities and injustices in his country. With the pontiff's health in a serious condition, some here remember his legacy and hope he will fight on.
Dear Francis, we're here for you. And we ask you not to give up because we need you. Long live Pope Francis. Long live Pope Francis. Long live Pope Francis.
At this critical moment, I believe that Argentines and the whole world must sit down and discuss the role of the historical dimension of Pope Francis's reign, because he is the only humanist leader who asks questions, criticizes, and highlights the reality of the working class and the poor.
Throughout the world, congregations have been praying for the Pope's health, from Poland, Honduras, and Brazil, which has the most Catholics in the world.
I remember when he came to Rio de Janeiro. He walked past my door. I was at the window. It was very emotional. A joy to see him like that, up close, very close. I'm praying for his recovery because it's very difficult.
The Vatican has remained tight-lipped about Pope Francis's health, but on Tuesday said that he had slept well. Doctors also noted an improvement.
Interesting in that report, Nicolas Sinez, hearing that Argentine saying how he's someone close to the people. Is that he's saying that because he's from Argentina, or is it more than that?
I think it's more than that. Of course, being an Argentinian, the Argentinian people love him a lot. But in the whole Latin America, in Africa too, when I came with him in the countries in the world, everywhere I saw at what point the faithful, Catholic faithful, loved him. It was very strange for us. We came in Rome, because in Rome we have the Pope twice by a week on St. Peter Place. We can see him twice by a week.
How's that different from any other pope? I've covered papal masses myself, and is always, you know, the faithful are there, and it's very enthusiastic. But what makes Francis different?
I think there is a personal proximity with each person. When you met Pope Benedict, he was very close in the personal relation, but if you are two in the same room with him, I think it's a very, very close and very personal relation. Francis has his capacity to make a personal relation even in a big event. If there is 1 million person on the place, he had a personal relation with each of them.
Is that a question of personality, or is it a question of politics?
I think it's a question of personality first. A personal capacity to make a relation with the people. Mm-hmm. And of course, there is something more political or even more pastoral, because his form of religion is very attentive at the culture. Mm-hmm. of the people and of the countries he met. So the encounter with the person is not just I met you, but I come with you, and I enter in relation with you, with your culture, with all your people, and for the persons, it's very important.
Hendra Munsterman, what's the signature of an Argentinian pope or of this Argentinian pope?
Yeah, so I fully agree with Nicolas Sinez. There is a very beautiful phrase of Cardinal Thorin, a French cardinal, who said, people came to Rome to see John Paul II, they came to Rome to listen to Benedict XVI, and they come to Rome to touch Pope Francis. Pope Francis is this pope of this proximity, of this capacity of the church to go out of itself, to go into the world, and to touch human realities, even if it's difficult, even in difficult situations, even if it's messy. This is a pope that likes to get close to people where they are. He's not a pope that wants the church to wait until the people come, but it's a church that has to, that wants to touch the people in the messiness of their lives. And I think that's a very Latin American thing. You know, this pope has been very much also, how can I say this? Been influenced by what we call the theology of the people. This is the Argentinian way of liberation theology, of being close to the poor, to the peripheries. And this pope is the pope that put the peripheries in the center of the church. So he turned everything around in a way like Jesus of Nazareth turned everything around.
Does that make him an outlier when you look at the conclave of cardinals today?
The conclave of cardinals will be very, very interesting. I think we never saw in recent times in the last century a conclave that is so open with so many differences and so many uncertainties. We have 138 cardinals now that have a voting right, and there is no clear favorite cardinal to become a pope. The question is, of course, what does this conclave in the next days? How do these cardinals look back on 12 years of Pope Francis? Are they happy with it? Probably most of them will be, more or less. 72% of the cardinals have been elected and made cardinal by Pope Francis, so that's a very big majority. But they come from different places. They have different realities. African cardinals don't think in the same way like Latin Americans or Eastern Europeans or Asians. So there will be a very interesting thing going on inside the conclave, behind the walls, already at the pre-conclave, when all these discussions will go on. We will not know anything about it, or maybe there will be some leaks afterwards, like often happens. But I think it's very open. The conclave is open, more open than ever before.
Bishop Rieucleux, in the case of John Paul II, he was ill for many years. And so the sort of the jockeying for position began long, long before he died. In the case of Francis, who's been hospitalized 4 times and is now 88 years old, he put out that autobiography while still alive. But you know, it was meant, I guess, originally to be posthumous. Right now, are you sensing the jockeying for position has begun? The jockeying for position to find out who the next pope will be.
I don't think now, because now everybody, and especially the cardinals themselves, Cardinal Parolin, who led the prayer yesterday on St. Peter's Square, and there were 20 cardinals and bishops, and especially the crowd. But for the future, we cannot say a word at the present time. Now we are thinking of this pope, and you have two big souvenirs explaining how he's very near of everybody, when we met him with the 20 bishops of the Antilles, mainly English-speaking and French-speaking, and it was during 2 hours, a very special time, because it was like a family, and he made us very informal, and he wants to, the exchange like...
What language did he speak?
He spoke Italian, and it was translated in English, but we understood both the language. And the other souvenir we showed how he wants to be with everybody, especially with simple people in Corsica, in the cathedral in Ajaccio last December. There was, when he entered the cathedral, there was a choir of boys and girls, and at the end of the Alleluia, he invites all the kids to come to him, and it was not it was informal. He wants to greet each of the children that they were there, just to show how that make him very popular.
And the Vatican's going to pains to show that he's still working every day. They say he signed off on the canonization of two new saints on Monday. Is this to dispel this, I guess you could say,
in his communiqué,
jockeying over the next pope?
In his communiqué, there were two unusual things. First, usually, when the Vatican announces canonization or beatification, it's the prefect of the dicastery of the ministry of the Vatican who makes the sense, came to the Pope and let him signing the decrets. The communicate said, no, it was not the prefect, it was Cardinal Parolin, the number two of the Vatican. So it seems that there's only very few people, the closest collaborators, can access the Pope today. So, for the governance of the Church, for 1-2 weeks, it's okay. But it can be usual for all the months. The second another thing in the communicate, it said the Pope will convocate a consistory for decided the canonization. Usually it's automatic, and the Vatican do not say there will be a consistory. The mention of this consistory is very unusual, and for the Vaticanist, automatically we think about another consistory when Pope Benedict announced the canonization of four saints. But at the end, he said, "Oh, I want to say," he said in Latin, "I will renounce." And obviously, this mention in the communicate of the Vatican at noon, for all the Vaticanists, there was this.
So this possibility that, like Benedict, he could step down.
It's a possibility, but.
You think it's plausible?
He explained that at the beginning of his ministry of Pope in 2013, he gave a letter, if I am not able to continue my mission, I resign. So the possibility is on the floor, but we don't know exactly what will happen in the coming days.
It's between him and God.
And we heard earlier you mentioned, Hendro Munsterman, that the Pope had named something like 72% of the top prelates in the Church since he's been a Pope. He's also named recently a Dean of the College of Cardinals, who, if there is a conclave, will be very influential. He's just named the first woman governor of Vatican City. All this to ensure that that the next pope will think like him?
Well, if I may, so we just got the latest information from the Vatican. A few seconds ago, the Vatican just announced that the Holy Father's clinical conditions remain critical, but stable. When the Vatican says stable, it means unchanged. So it stays critical, even and unchanged since yesterday, and the prognosis remains reserved. So this is a slightly more negative communication than yesterday evening again. So this is live from the Vatican. About your question, we don't really know what is in the head of the Pope. All the Vaticanisti, all the Vatican reporters that are here in Rome, and Nicolas Senesi, who was here for 4 years, knows very well how this works. We try to understand every word, every little word of all the communications, everything that is said and also everything that is not said. A little example, when they say the Pope slept well, we don't know if it is because he is in a good state or because he gets, for example, morphine or other kind of medicaments that make him sleep. So it's very difficult for us to understand really what is going on. What is true is that the Pope wants to give the impression, wants to give the message out for believers inside the world, but also for non-believers. I'm still here. I'm governing. And he names bishops. Yesterday there were some new bishops appointed. Today there were new bishops appointed. He gave some more power to the woman, the religious sister that is in charge of the Vatican State since a few weeks. And indeed he wants to decisions that he makes are not decisions for today, but decisions for tomorrow. This is a Pope that has a clear vision of the Church of tomorrow. And I think this is one of the questions also when it's about resignation or not. This Pope has an idea with the church, and in the Catholic Church we call this synodality. This Pope wants the church to be more synodal, which means not only a church where the clergy tells the people what to do, but where normal people, believers, are completely actively involved in the decision making, and also in the decision taking of the church. This project he started 3 years ago. He didn't finish it yet. And I think this is one of the things that is probably in his mind when it is about this question about, shall I resign or shall I finish his work in the next few months if God gives me enough time to do this?
A Pope who's a reformer, and we've gone so far in this discussion for the first time in a long while without saying the words Donald Trump, but here goes. Already the Pope, before his February 14th hospitalization, unafraid to take on what he's hearing out of Washington. It all began last month. The U.S. vice president, in an interview with Fox News, pointing to Christian values as he pushed back against immigrants.
As an American citizen, your compassion belongs first to your fellow citizens. It doesn't mean you hate people from outside of your own borders, but there's this old school, and I think it's a very Christian concept, by the way, that you love your family, and then you love your neighbor, and then you love your community, and then you love your fellow citizens in your own country, and then after that, you can focus and prioritize the rest of the world.
Now that drew a public rebuke from the Pope himself. In a letter to the U.S. Catholic clergy 2 weeks ago, he stated that Christian love is not a concentric expansion of interests that little by little extend to other persons and groups, which, by the way, in turn had the Trump administration doubling down.
I got how it's worse for the Pope. Pope wants to fix the Catholic Church. I'm saying this as a lifelong Catholic. I was baptized Catholic. I was First Communion as a Catholic. Confirmation as a Catholic. He ought to fix the Catholic Church and concentrate on his work and leave border enforcement to us. He wants to attack us from securing our border. He's got a wall around the Vatican, does he not?
Wall around the Vatican. Bishop Riocreux, your thoughts on this showdown with J.D. Vance?
Excuse me.
The showdown between the Pope and J.D. Vance.
He answered with the gospel. The gospel of the Good Samaritan, which is in the Gospel of Luke, explaining that we have to love everybody, and he rebuke the position of Vance, and it was addressed to the bishops, the American bishops, and the American bishops took this position of the Pope this position helped them to say the truth and the gospel, and not the gospel is not
even before Donald Trump returned to the White House. Would you say that this Pope's biggest pushback among the cardinals comes from the United States?
Yes, in some way, yes, because there is a strong movement But most of the bishops are on the same line with the Pope. And for example, also the Pope appoint the new Archbishop of Washington, who was the Bishop of San Diego, and which is very strong against the position of Mr. Trump.
Nicolas Senez?
There were fights between Catholic Church in the United States and the Pope for many years. But little, step by step, Pope Francis named his own bishops in the American episcopacy. So step by step, the episcopacy changed. And now the cardinals, for example, the new cardinal of Washington, but also the Cardinal of Newark and the Cardinal in Chicago are Bergoglio men, in a way. But I think it's difficult for the Trump administration to push a candidate in an eventual conclave, because, first of all, it's difficult to imagine a pope of the powerful country. It's for that it's difficult.
J.D. Vance, very public about his conversion to Catholicism. And
yes, J.D. Vance is typical of this line of U.S. Catholics. We are very conservative and, in a way, against more Catholics than Pope Francis. They said themselves, we are more Catholics than the Pope. And I think it's a problem because they made their own doctrine, their own Catholic doctrine, against the Pope and the Vatican, and it's a form of a national Catholicism, which is very dangerous for the unity of the Church. But I think the Trump administration, it's difficult for the administration to push an American cardinal as a new Pope. But they can push a cardinal closer than their views, or trying to block the election of a pope too much contrary to their view. And in a way, they can. You know, when during the first mandate of Donald Trump, there were a tribe with some conservative Catholic in the United States to push Pope Francis to resign. And they tried to, they called that the Red Hat Report, to make a report of all the cardinals trying, having files on all the cardinals to say, oh, this one is contrary to our views, so we have a file to block him. We have an affair we can push just before the conclave to block him and the cardinals with no vote for him. And today, or in next month, or in next years, during a new conclave, it's possible with all the power of the Trump administration to have a new initiative of this type to push back a cardinal, or to stop a cardinal to be a pope.
Andrew Munsterman, are you sensing big interest from the political authorities in the United States in what's going on right now where you are?
Well, it's true that that in the United States, the Catholic vote during the presidential elections has been decisive. Yeah, so we have swing states in the United States, but we also have one swing vote, and this is the Catholic vote. If you win the Catholic vote, you win the elections. And this is what happened with Donald Trump. The campaign of Donald Trump was much smarter in the direction of Catholics than the campaign of Kamala Harris. And I think this is an important aspect. Another aspect is that we should always understand that if you would put the Catholic doctrine in political terms, we would say that on bioethical issues, on issues on sexuality and all kind of things, the Catholic Church is right wing. But on social issues, on social economic issues, the Catholic Church is clearly left-wing. And you cannot have either or. And this is politically always a very difficult situation for bishops, because they always are, in a way, fighting against whatever administration, because there are always issues that they have to fight against. There is one thing here that seems very important for me. Since the Second Vatican Council, which means a very important meeting of bishops in 1962, 1965, the Catholic Church speaks about the preferential option for the poor. So, founded on the gospel, founded of what Jesus Christ said in the Bible, the Catholic Church said God has a preferential option for the poor. That's what the Bible tells us, and we as a church, we will have to do the same thing. That is why Pope Francis is so close to the refugees. That is why Pope Francis is so close to the people that live in the slums in Argentina. That is why Pope Francis asks for a more outbalanced economic system in the planet. And that's why he criticizes also neo-capitalism. And these are all issues that are very difficult for right-wing Americans, Republicans and pro-Trump voters, and also pro-Trump Catholics, pro-Trump priests, bishops, and cardinals, to accept. So that's why they try to interpret the gospel and what the church says in their own way. About maybe one thing about G.D. Vance. G.D. Vance is a convert. You know, he converted to Catholicism in 2021, and I think that's in itself very, very interesting. But he is also a victim in a way of the English translation of the Bible. When he says that there are certain concentric circles, but that you have to live first your family, your parents, your family, then your neighbors, etc., etc. I think it's also part of the problem is that the Bible has been translated into English, saying that you should love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus asked, who is the neighbor? But the neighbor in the gospel, in the Greek New Testament, is not a geographical neighbor. It is, in French we would say le prochain, in German we would say die nächste. It's the one that is close to me, not necessarily geographically, but the one that comes on my path, the poor person that I meet when I'm walking through the city or traveling. So I think G.D. Vance is a victim of the English translation of the gospel when he talks about these concentric circles.
Yeah, and this idea that the church has to be on the side of the poor has the Pope taking on conservatives. In the book that Bishop Rieucreux has in front of him there, just last month it was published in several languages, Francis taking a dig at the conservatives' embrace of the Kappa Magna. The Kappa Magna, the ceremonial cloak that's worn by cardinals, bishops, and other prelates. It's used to be, by the way, 15 meters long, and it's been reduced to 7.
It's finished since 50 years.
Right. So, but there are conservative clerics who want the Kappa Magna back and who want the Mass in Latin.
Just a few, one or two. But
when he says that in his book, what is he?
He said, and I heard him telling that where is rigidity? There is problem rigidity, which is just to take the vestments of the past. But one thing very interesting: when he was appointed pope, it was Obama, the first chief of state to congratulate the new pope was Obama. And when the pope came in 10 years ago, Obama welcomed him very, very warmly, and Trump and Pope Francis met very shortly, but because it was not the same line. But one sign also that the Pope gave 2 years ago, he appointed the nuncio with a Frenchman, Christophe Pierre, he appointed a cardinal, and it was very appreciated by all the bishops of the country, which means that the church with the bishops and the cardinals are also agree with the Pope, and it's normal because all the bishops should be with the Pope.
You think that it's a given that Francis's successor will be a reformer, will not be a conservative?
Oh, nobody knows how the song says, what will be the next pope. And there will be a pope, and all the popes are different.
Is it going to be now like the World Cup, where it has to be on a different continent? And now that you've had one in Argentina, you need to have one in Asia or in Africa?
It would be on the personality,
Yes. For a conclave, for election of a new pope, you need first the actual pope died or resigned. And after that, there is a time of mourning. There is time of each day, the cardinals in Rome are meeting every day, every morning, in meetings at General Congregation. And they are preparing the conclave, but first of all, they are looking for the profile of the next pope. The question is, who do we need?
Okay, so talk us through this. Talk us through this, because you had Nicolas Senez, Benedict, who was more of a conservative, the previous pope. He resigns. How did we get from Benedict to Francis?
Because in the general congregations, the cardinals and first of all, the cardinals of not the curia, but of the towns around the world, was very, very upset about the scandals in the curia, and they said, we want to stop all this combinazione, Italian and curia
intrigue.
Yeah, we do not want that, and we want a man who reform the curia. And we need a man with authority who can reform quickly the curia, who can take the decisions. And that they choose a Jesuit. They choose a cardinal who was very known in Latin America with his capacity to put all the personality and to make a debate to put this reform on the good way. But after Pope Francis realized that a reform of a curia is a first step, but the world church needs a reform, a deep reform, and it's all the dynamic he has decided for the church. But so, it's this manner was.
That's why he explained in the book that he thought he will be there for 3 or 4 years, and here since 12 years, and he made the reform because during his congregation he gave a very short speech, and the cardinals were very impressed, and himself said, when I enter in the conclave, I did not think I would be elected, and I was ready to go back to Argentina. And never went back to Argentina, and he did the reforms, and with the different ways, by the men we appointed, by the gathering he had, we call that in synod, and in this jubilee year, we are here now, in 2025.
So, Hendra Munsterman, picking up on what Nicolas just said, back when Francis becomes Pope, there's an emergency with all those scandals inside of the church. And so that helped to concentrate the minds. Now there are still scandals, but not. But it's in fact, there's one here in France right now involving a Catholic school that's making headlines. But it's not the same level of intensity as it was back then. Does that mean the pendulum can swing the other way?
I don't think the pendulum will swing the other way. I fully agree with both other speakers until now. I always like to cite this talk. I mean, during this pre-conclave, these general audiences that Nicolas Senez talked about, and the speech, the little speech that Pope Francis, before becoming a pope, gave there, this speech has leaked out. So we have the speech. We know what he said there. And for him, the diagnosis of the church was that this church is sick. And the sickness is, he calls it self-referentiality. It's because the church is self-referential. It only looks at itself. instead of going out. And this is what he says to these cardinals. And he impressed the cardinals by telling them so. He said, why are these scandals happening in the Vatican? It's because we only look at ourselves. We only think that we are the center of the world. But Christ is outside. And he even quotes the Bible while saying, in the Bible, Jesus says, I'm knocking at the door. But, he said, Cardinal Bergoglio, so the latest Pope Francis, he said, sometimes I think that Jesus is knocking at the door from inside and that we are called to let him out. And I think this is really the center of the pontificate of Pope Francis. And I don't think the next Pope can go back to this self-referential church that wants to stay inside and waits for the people to come, but has to go on this way of going to the slums, of going to the existential peripheries where people are suffering, where people are struggling with their lives, with their sexuality, where people are struggling economically, but where people have trust in God and where people have find in the church a place where they can be at home and where they know that there is a pope, that there are bishops, that there are priests, that there are pastors, deacons, and all kind of pastoral workers that walk with them instead of waiting for them to come.
Now, Sunday is Oscar night, and let's hope that life's not imitating art, because among the contenders for Best Pictures at the Academy Awards is Edward Berger's Conclave, starring Ralph Fiennes, Stanley Tucci, John Lithgow, and Isabella Rossellini. The film's already won the top prize at Britain's BAFTA Awards. Conclave, which is about, I hope I'm not spoiling it, Bishop Riocre, a conclave.
It's a film. It's a film.
What do you make of this coincidence?
I don't know. I don't know. But I did not see the film. I heard many things about the film, especially at the end. But I think I heard many confidence of cardinals taking part of the conclave in 13 years ago with John Paul, when John Paul II was elected, with Benedict, with Francis. It's not likely in the film. It's exactly two brothers in faith who are together. It's not to push like we could see in the film, and especially Nicolas Senez in the last conclave. It was at the time of very difficult for the church and to make the reforms, and the Pope did the reforms.
Nicolas Senez, does life imitate art?
I think when I spoke to the cardinals who were in a conclave, I've heard a great gravity in those days. They are very aware of what they are doing in those moments, and I think, I hope that I will not a conclave too soon. But for example, in a moment of a world world in crisis. Such crisis can play a role also in the conclave, because the cardinal can say, we need a pope to respond of this world crisis before the crisis of the church.
We're out of time, but Hendro Munsterman, your final thought on that point.
No, I completely agree. The world is on fire. The church is searching for a future in the third millennium. And I think most of the cardinals think that maybe Pope Francis was a bit spontaneous. Maybe he was a bit not always drawing between the lines that the Catholic Church has. But the direction that he gave, I think for most of the cardinals, this will be the direction that we have to continue. And then the only question is, what is the best person to fit in this project of a church that is preparing, that is beginning a third millennium, and searching for a new identity in this new world.
Well, that would be a topic for a debate. We'll definitely have to have you back for that. Andrew Munsterman, I want to thank you for joining us from Rome. I want to thank you, Bishop Riocre, Nicolas Senez. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.